All right. Thank you, Chase. Thank you for that introduction, and thank you all for being here this afternoon. As he said, my name is Matthew Wiggins, and today I've got the opportunity to present on some of my dissertation data about integrating cover crops and pre-emergent herbicides in cotton. So currently at the University of Tennessee, we have quite a bit of ongoing research using cover crops and evaluating what they have to offer as far as in-season weed control. We're doing that both cotton and corn, actually in soybean as well. And we're actually looking at managing cover crops for their weed control potential, which seldom times they are managed in our state for that. Typically, they're managed for erosion control and other factors like that. Cover crops have long been researched to increase soil quality, whether that's through adding organic matter back to the soil or adding some water potential early season with that heavy residue. Also, legume crops fix nitrogen back into the soil for the subsequent crop, which is important in corn and cotton where we have a crop that is demanding nitrogen throughout the season. But also, we're interested in evaluating those for weed suppression. If you've been involved in weed science in the past few years, you understand the need and the want of our producers to have an additional means to control problematic weeds. Unfortunately, in the mid-south United States, we are now facing 10 weeds that are confirmed glyphosate resistant. Those that are highlighted in orange are the ones that we do have confirmed currently in Tennessee. The two listed at the bottom, highlighted in blue, Italian ryegrass and Johnson grass. If you attended Dr. Steckel's previous session this morning, those are the two that we're most concerned about moving forward, adding more grass species to this ongoing list. But of all the weeds on that list, you've heard the other presenters today, and you'll continue to hear after I get off the stage, this is our primary weed. This is our driver weed. This is, as Garrett said, this is how we judge our weed control programs is by how much glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth we have left in the field. Not only is it competitive from a biological standpoint, we've already talked about extended germination periods and how many seed can be produced on each female plant, but it also is resistant to several different modes of action, including glyphosate, which has been one of our primary post-emergence herbicide options for the past few years. Here is a map just kind of showing where we have glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth in the United States. So obviously Tennessee is in that list and much of the southeast and much of the cotton belt. So it's important to understand moving forward what kind of control options we have. We've already talked about post-emergence applications, some of the other presentations, how we're very limited in the amount of effective post-emergence applications we have. So we're having a need now, and we need, and producers are wanting us to evaluate other means of control. And one of those means of control that we are evaluating is integrating cultural control methods such as cover crops. The objective of this trial in my dissertation was to evaluate Palmer amaranth control in response to an integrated weed control program that included pre-emergence herbicides and cover crop residues in a cotton system. Materials, I'm just going to run through the materials and methods very briefly. This study took place at the West Tennessee Research and Education Center there in Jackson, Tennessee. We used a Fibromax 1944 Glytol Liberty Link variety for this trial, and we have planting dates that are very typical for the Mid-South. Herbicide application was made at planting, so directly behind the planter, so this was a true pre. We used a standard backpack application equipment. You can see the labeling and listings there for the nozzles we use, 15 gallons per acre, and we sprayed this at 4 miles an hour. Plot size was two rows on a 38-inch row spacing by 30 feet. As we are in Tennessee, we did do typical no-till production, which is very predominant in our area, and also had the, I already mentioned the row spacing and seeding populations and all the other agronomic practice other than weed control followed recommendations set forth by UT Extension. Talk a little bit about our treatment list now, and I apologize, it's set up for my dissertation, so everything is in metric. So I can kind of go through this just real briefly and kind of and let you know what everything is if you cannot do the figuring in your head. But our cover crops that we're interested in evaluating are two grass species and two legume species. Our grass species were sowed at 60 pounds to the acre. Hairy vetch was seeded at 20 pounds to the acre and crimson clover at 15. We're also interested in evaluating combinations of legumes and grasses to see if maybe we can get over some of the carbon penalty that we can sometimes see by using a grass-only cover crop such as cereal rye and winter wheat. The data that we're interested in collecting in this study, of course, was biomass. The research shows that this amount of biomass directly correlates to the amount of in-season weed control that the cover crops are providing. So we felt it's important to present on that. Also, we're interested in visual weed control ratings. These took place once a week for 4 weeks after we made our application. And this is just a visual rating of 0 to 100% control, 0 being basically untreated, 100% being no weeds. Also, weed density was measured in plants per meter squared, then also we're going to present on lint yield. Typical statistical design of this trial was a randomized complete block with a factorial treatment arrangement with 4 replications. We used SAS 9.3 and we used the PROC mix in SAS 9.3, and means were separated using Fisher's protected LSD at the 0.05. So we've already talked about some of the treatments with the cover crops and went through the seeding rates there. The 3 herbicide treatments that we're effectively looking at is the encapsulated formulation of acetochlor from Monsanto or Warrant, and the flumeturans, cotyrans, the 2 of our, you know, main cotton pre-emergence herbicides that are used in the Mid-South, and we're comparing that to a no-herbicide treatment. All right, so now we're going to move into our data slides and just take a second also just to point out that the variable that we're interested in evaluating is listed on the y-axis, and the x-axis we have our different cover crop treatments. And first we're going to start with cover crops and move into the herbicides as we continue on. Just want to point out that we really had outstanding amount of biomass this past year. We got good growth out of our cover crops. These cover crops were seeded in October of the year before, allowed to overwinter, and then we typically kill them 2 weeks before we get ready to plant our anticipated planting time. So you can see that the mixtures of the legumes and the grasses did provide adequate biomass, but really not necessarily a whole lot more biomass or statistically amount different than a single cover crop by themselves. But you can even see that in the fallow area we had some biomass there that was just native vegetation, native winter annual weeds. And so with that, I'm going to say that in these plots where we did have cover crops, there were no other winter native vegetation. It was all just cover crops. So we did a pretty good job suppressing some of the problematic weeds we've already talked about, the horseweed and the Italian ryegrass that would normally be prevalent there. We took these weed control ratings, like I said before, from 7 days after application all the way until 4 weeks after we applied. So just to kind of show you the end result, I'm just going to fast forward to the 28 days after application. And what I'd like to point out is that as far as from a weed control perspective, 4 weeks out, the mixtures and the grass species did the best as far as controlling weeds in season or suppressing our weeds in season. You might look at the two offerings that the legume cover crops had, and you actually see that we saw decreased weed control in those areas. And we'll talk about that more in just a second, so that's important to note. Because you can see now in our weed density, you can see that our weed density was quite higher where we had a legume cover crop by itself. There's a lot of research out there, and I think all the research in my dissertation supports this statement, but in areas of high pressure palm amaranth, we actually see enhanced germination rates when we use the legume cover crop. So not only do our cash crops like nitrogen, but pigweed does also. So that's going to be an important recommendation for us moving forward for our producers, is that if we have a situation where producers want to utilize a cover crop system or put cover crops into a system, it would be better for us to, you know, promote the use of a grass and legume combination if they're trying to get that nitrogen versus using a legume cover crop by itself. Now looking at how the herbicides reacted, you can see initially in the first 2 weeks of the evaluation period, we got very good control out of both of our herbicides, both the Warrant and the Cotyran. Greater than 88% control. As we moved throughout the season, and we actually did have quite a bit of rainfall this spring in West Tennessee, and we can see our control is starting to diminish. As we start getting those later timings, you can actually see 4 weeks after the fact, after we applied, you can see that Warrant is actually outperforming Cotyran at this time, and we believe that's due to the encapsulated formulation that Warrant has. Also like to point out at this time that you can see currently even with these herbicides averaged over all the cover crops, these pre-emergence herbicides 4 weeks out are only really allowing us to have about 50-55% control of palm amaranth. In Tennessee, that's going to be a crop destruct. We're going to till that up and we're probably going to go back and plant beans there. So it's going to be a pre-emergent system by itself. It's not going to be a standalone with these cover crops that we're going to have to use additional means to control our in-season weeds. And palm amaranth density by herbicide, similar trend, as you can see there. And lint yield follows the same trend. So both of these, regardless which herbicide we chose, it was better than no herbicide or relying on the cover crops by themselves. So just to conclude this up real fast, as far as the biomass goes, legume and the mixtures of the grasses, that those are the ones that accumulated the most biomass and added to in-season weed control. As far as that weed control goes, not only did those heavier residues help, but those pre-emergence herbicide treatments were very adequate in controlling initially. As we move forward, we are going to see the need for timely post-emergence application. And then yield herbicide application did have effect on yield. So if you can take anything home with you from my presentation today, I guess, and really out of my whole dissertation involving cover crops and integrating those into cotton systems, are that cover crops are effective in suppressing glyphosate-resistant Palmer amaranth. They can be finicky, and they do have to be managed differently than maybe what we're used to managing a cover crop per se. But even our best cover crop treatment, which was some of the grass species, you saw that we only had marginal control 4 weeks out, and that's 40 to 45% control a weed control. So obviously, that in conjunction with the pre-emergence herbicide, we saw we had about 50 or 55% control 4 weeks out. So it did add to that system. But neither cover crops nor a pre-emergence herbicide alone are going to be where we are in the future. So we're definitely still going to need to use timely post-emergence herbicides and to continue to steward the new technologies coming down the line. That way we do have more options moving forward. So with that, I'd like to thank Dr. Steckel for guiding me through my dissertation. I'd like to thank everybody on the UT Weed Science Research Team and my committee. And if I got time, I can answer a few questions.
We got time for questions.
Yes, sir. Sure. The question is what does it cost maybe for legume, grass, species mix? How much does it cost to get it going? Well, seed cost alone is probably going to cost you somewhere between $15 and $20 an acre. Currently in the state of Tennessee, I know NRCS is working with some of our producers, and they have a cost share program going on. I think that's for a limited few mixtures or a soil health mix, if you will. And the soil health mix actually consists of five different cover crops and can be quite expensive, almost $185 an acre. So it's important for us to utilize these tools coming from the federal government and the help that with getting these established and helping to make them sustainable in our systems.
Any other questions? If not, let's thank our speaker.
Thank you.